Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us. We're talking today about parents, specifically what makes a parent in the eyes of the law. 2 weeks ago, Maryland's highest court ruled that non-biological parents who live with and help raise children may also have parental rights. These de facto parents may lack traditional biological or legal ties to their children, like adoption, but because of their heavy involvement in the child's life, the court found that, quote, a legal parent does not have a right to voluntarily cultivate their child's parental-type relationship with a third party and then seek to extinguish it, end quote. The decision overturned a decision in 2008 in which the Maryland Court of Appeals held that non-birth, non-legal third-party parents had to prove not only their own de facto parent status, but also had to prove either that the custodial parent was unfit or that ending their relationship with the child would be harmful to the child. Joining me in Studio A is Michelle Zavos, managing partner and founder of the Zavos Junker Law Group, with offices in Silver Spring and in Falls Church, Virginia. She focuses on all aspects of family law, including adoption, estate planning, and family formation. And she's an advocate for legal protections for families, including families headed by same-sex couples. She's a member of the National Law Family Advisory Council, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, and a founder of the National LGBT Bar Association. Michelle Zavos is also adjunct professor at the Washington College of Law at American University. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you.
So, Michelle, in the case the appeals court just ruled on is titled Conover v. Conover. You helped craft some of the arguments in that case. Can you give us the factual background we need to know to understand that case?
Certainly. These were two women who were together. They decided to have a child together. They had a child together. Michelle Conover is the non-biological mother, non-legal parent. Her partner gave birth to the child named Jackson. They then later married, but they were not married at the time of the child's birth. They broke up. Michelle Conover saw the child for some period of time, and I think it was about 18 months later or so, Brittany, I believe, decided that Michelle could no longer see the little boy. At that point, Michelle had very few options on how to see this child. What happened was Brittany then filed for divorce in the marriage, but did not disclose that there had been a child because this was not a child of the marriage. Michelle then responded to the divorce complaint saying that she wanted, I believe, visitation or custody with the child.
Let me ask you to let me interrupt and make sure that I'm understanding the implications. If the two had been married at the time of Jackson's birth, it would have been automatic that Jackson's existence would have been part of the original case?
Most likely. It's not automatic. There's something called a marital presumption. And what that is if a child is born into a marriage or within a certain period of time after divorce based on pregnancy.
After marriage.
No, they were married. The marital presumption says there will be a presumption that that child is a legal child of both parents.
I see.
And now, that's, you know, somewhat problematic around the country about whether that really applies to a same-sex couple, but it should apply because there's no question about whether.
But at any rate, in this case, the marriage didn't exist.
There was no
marriage
beforehand.
Okay.
So there was no marital presumption.
So I interrupted you. You were telling us the course of things.
Right. So they are in this divorce proceeding, and a judge rules in the lower court rules that that Michelle Conover has no basis, no standing to have visitation or custody for this child. She then appeals to the Court of Special Appeals. That's the intermediate court in Maryland. And the intermediate court invokes this case of Janice M. versus Margaret K. from 2008, in which court had something similar. Two women who had been together, one of the women adopted a child from India. They did not do what we call a second parent adoption, so both of them had legal parentage.
So only one of them was named as the adoptive parent.
Only one of them was a legal parent, and in India, that's all they could do. They break up. The non-legal, non-adoptive parent, Margaret K., sees the child for some period of time and then the ex-partner, Janice M., the adoptive parent, decides she can't see the child anymore.
That Michelle, that Margaret can't see the child anymore.
Margaret sues, and that case goes all the way eventually to the Maryland Court of Appeals, which is our highest court, like a Supreme Court. And before Janice M. and Margaret K., we had the doctrine of de facto parent. And what that meant is a person who's asserting parental rights had to prove a number of things, that the parent held out with the legal parent's agreement, held out the other person as a parent, that the other person lived with the child, that the other person acted substantially as a parent without any financial payment, and that it's in the best interest. You get to then the best interest test. Is it in the best interest to continue the relationship with the child? In Janice M. versus Margaret K., the court changed that standard and instituted a standard of whether a child, whether a person can prove that the legal parent is unfit and there are exceptional circumstances that would allow the non-legal parent to continue a relationship with the child. And after that is all proven, you then get to the best interest standard. And the reason the court held that, again, in 2008, is the way our law works. It is based on having a mother and a father, two parents who biologically create a child. Everybody else is what we call a third party. And third parties do not have rights to children. The other thing is that the way our law works, it is the right of the parent. The focus has always been on the parent because, remember, children used to be property. So the question is, if a legal parent is not unfit, then why would someone else be able to claim parentage? Obviously, that has changed enormously over the last 25 years, where families are constituted in many different kinds of ways. And one of the ways, of course, is that you've got two people raising a child who are not biologically related. And this is not just same-sex couples. This can be anyone who are not biologically related or both don't have court-ordered legal relationships with a child. So what the court did in Janice M. is
in 2008,
completely negated the fact of a child's perspective, because it's the child who has the relationship with the parents, not the legal parent. And that was a terrible case. And it was a terrible case for Margaret K., I have to say. A terrible case. And
because Margaret K. was not able to continue
her
relationship with this child that she
had been. What was found in the Margaret K. case is that actually exceptional circumstances were proven, meaning that if her relationship with the child was ended, it would have an adverse impact on the child. But then the next standard after proving all that is best interest of the child. In this case, I believe, was in Montgomery County. And the court determined that it was not in the child's best interest for Margaret K. to continue having a relationship with the child, I think, in my view, because Janice M. behaved so badly and pulled the child between the two of them. And had Margaret K. been a biological father, there is no question that she would have continued to have a relationship with that child. So the child's perspective was negated in that case.
This is Midday on WIPR, and I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with attorney and LGBT advocate Michelle Zavos. We're talking about de facto parents and how courts determine who has a right to be involved in a child's life. What is going through your mind, listeners, as you listen to this? Have you run into the issue of wanting custody or visitation with a child for whom you don't have parental rights? Is this personal for you? You can share your story with us. You can call us at 410-662-8780. Or send an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm struck, Michelle Zavos, as you walk us through these two cases 8 years apart, because already at the time of the 2008 ruling, which from your perspective is a terrible ruling, many states, and you said Maryland, had been recognizing, at least in some cases, de facto parents, and many states had a doctrine of de facto parenting. So
What happened?
What happened in 2008? Why did Maryland go a different way?
I think it was an outlier. I think the court got it wrong. That happens sometimes. And in fact, in the Conover case, the same Court of Appeals with a different makeup of judges, really slammed the court in Janice M. versus Margaret K., saying this was a terrible decision. And that's only 8 years ago. So it's very interesting. So I think it was an outlier. It's hard to know what the judges were thinking. But I think part of the problem in that case is the judges, again, did not consider the child. What they considered was solely the legal parent, who was Janice M., and that Margaret K. was a so-called third party. And the court put all third parties in the same category. And Margaret K. was not a third party. She was a parent. She raised this child. They decided together to have this child. She acted as a parent. The child saw her as a parent. So she's not, you know, a grandparent who visits once in a while. She's not a daycare worker, any of that. She was a parent. She just didn't have a legal relationship to the child. And I think in Conover, the court realized its mistake.
And so tell me more specifically what the appeals court said this month in Conover. What now is the policy in Maryland?
So the policy now, the court reversed the Janice M. case, said it was wrongly decided, which is fairly unusual for a court to do simply 8 years later. And the court talked about how our notions of family are changing. The court pointed to, interestingly enough, marriage equality coming to Maryland. I think that's really not relevant in some ways, but I think the court pointed to it to say that we recognize that there is more acceptance of different kinds of families, and you know, we want to include that in our decision making. So the court said that Michelle Conover meets the requirement of a de facto parent, given that the court had overturned the Janice M. case, so that Michelle Conover did not have to meet that exceptional circumstances standard. She could not prove Brittany was unfit. I mean, it's extremely, extremely difficult to prove anyone's unfit.
But she doesn't need to under the...
And now she doesn't need to. She only has to prove she's a de facto parent. Again, that the legal parent held her out as a parent, which she did. They lived together. She acted as a parent. Then she has to prove best interest. You have to first meet those factors before you get to the best interest standard.
But you still have to prove that. You still have to address what
correct.
Is best for the child.
Right.
This is probably a good... We need to take a break, and this may be a good moment to do it. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation about what makes a parent under the law. We'll take your calls. You can be part of this conversation if you send an email to midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. We'll also be speaking with State Senator Rich Natalino about legislation he introduced on this issue back in 2015 and what he thinks the legislature needs to do now. All that when we come back. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Early this month, Maryland's highest court decided to recognize de facto parents, parents who are not necessarily tied by biology, adoption, or marriage to children that they have been very involved in raising. This decision has been especially meaningful to LGBT couples. The U.S. Supreme Court recognized same-sex marriage across the U.S. last year. Same-sex marriage became legal in Maryland in 2013. I'm speaking with Michelle Zavos, managing partner and founder of the Zavos Junker Law Group and an adjunct faculty member at the law school at American University. We're taking your calls on this issue. Your comments about de facto parents, who should be considered a parent. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Michelle Zavos, we were talking about what someone needs to prove to convince the court they are a de facto parent.
Yeah.
And have we covered that?
Well, the last factor, and it's, you know, so much part of what I do, I think I forgot to articulate it, and that is that there's a bond between the de facto parent and the child. And that's sort of implicit in looking at these. But that is the last factor before one reaches the question of what's in the best interest of the child. Now, the problem I have with this decision, I mean, it's a great decision compared to Janice M., but the problem is that the court did not find that if de facto parentage is proven, that those four factors are proven, the parent is then a legal parent. The court says we must then do a second analysis, which is what's in the best interest of the child. If someone was actually a legal parent, there would be no best interests question. There would be how do you determine custody or visitation, but the person would be a legal parent. But what the court, I think, is saying in Conover is we'll apply those four factors. If a person is then proven to be a de facto parent, we will then do the best interest analysis. And only after then will we determine whether someone is akin to a legal parent and who has rights to custody and visitation and responsibilities for child support.
So you wish the court had gone further?
I do.
I'd like to pull Senator Rich Mattolino into the conversation. He is serving his second term in the Maryland State Senate. He represents the 18th District in Montgomery County, which includes Chevy Chase, Wheaton, parts of Bethesda, Rockville, Silver Spring. When he was elected to the House of Delegates in 2002, Rich Mattolino was the first openly gay person elected to the Maryland General Assembly. Welcome to Midday, Senator Mattolino.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
We're very glad to have you. So you introduced legislation in the 2015 session of the General Assembly pertaining to de facto parenting. It did not pass. What would the legislation have done, and why didn't it pass?
Well, the legislation would have set up a test for proving your that you would function as a de facto parent. It would have set up a series of decisions for or a series of points for a court to look at what is in the best interest of a child to continue a relationship with someone who has been acting as a parent. So it set up another test for how to determine that. I think it went further than the Court of Appeals, and I think Michelle would agree with me that it went further than the Court of Appeals did in its decision to set up a test that was, I think, more favorable in determining parentage and keeping the relationship going. But it created a similar situation to what the Court of Appeals did in their decision in the Conover case.
So is there something then that you think the legislature needs to do now, picking up from the Conover case?
Having just won this case and having this new decision and fortunately having them overturn the very bad decision in the prior case, which I think, Michelle, is Janice
M. versus Margaret K.
Right. So the Janice M. decision, that now they've set up, I think, a more obviously favorable situation, and let's see how the courts start to use the new test that the Court of Appeals has said that they should, which is certainly much better than what had been the test for making these sort of decisions under Janice. So to me, I would say probably that's see how it starts to work out before we decide whether or not an additional legislative fix is necessary.
And actually, if I could follow up on what the senator is saying, you know, as soon as someone has to go into court to prove that they are a de facto parent, they've lost. Because the way our court system works is that person who has to bring the litigation is going to have to pay an attorney or is going to have to find someone who is going to represent them what we call pro bono without payment. And that is not easy. I mean, these cases, a custody case and a hotly contested divorce case, can cost someone somewhere between $75,000 and $150,000 easily. So if someone has to go to court, even with this favorable decision in Conover, which I am not minimizing, It's extremely difficult. And a number of other jurisdictions, Delaware, Maine, and D.C., are looking at things like something called a consent to parent, which tries to change the view from biology or legality to intent. So, for example, in D.C., where I also practice, when people are having a child together, they can sign a consent to parent, and it makes that non-biological parent a parent. They don't have to then go in and prove they're de facto parent.
Well, I wanted to ask both of you about that, because I think the phrase, you know, no surprise, very often Latin phrases don't fit perfectly into the English language. And I think the phrase de facto parent almost sounds, it sounds a bit like default. It sounds like, okay, the High Court in Maryland has now said that courts can recognize de facto parents. So if I've been, mothering this child, and if I've been taking care of her and feeding her, et cetera,
Well, that's not quite, you're not quite in. You have to, the other parent
right.
has to hold you out as a parent. You have to form a bond. You have to live with that child. So it's not like you're a daycare worker who's taking care of the child.
I get it. But let me ask Senator Madalena, what are you hearing from constituents about this appeals court ruling? Do they feel like it has solved their problem, and do you think that they're perhaps assuming too much?
I think it's very important to make the point before I answer your question, Sheila. I'm sorry I didn't hear Michelle earlier, and I feel confident she made this point that even though this is a favorable decision, it does not take away the essential need to, under Maryland law, to make sure you have legal status as a parent. I mean, you shouldn't just go, you know, oh, great, now I'm protected. If you don't have, under, I hate to use these terms, the legal relationship with the child, do the second parent adoption, finalize the adoption, do all the things that you have to do to ensure that the connection stays after, should a marriage dissolve. You know, unfortunately, no one thinks about that. No one thinks about that at the beginning, that, you know, oh, everything is hunky-dory. We don't have to worry about these things because we'll always be together as a family.
I hear that all the time.
That doesn't happen. So protect yourself. Take the other legal steps that you have to in order to protect your relationship with the child. So this case does not do that. Now, I think people, you know, as you introduced me, Sheila, you know that as the only openly gay person in the Senate, and the I think one of just two that's actually parenting. That I know a lot of other LGBT families, and people who paid attention to Janice, and people who pay attention to these issues realize that the Conover decision is a huge step forward. That protects our family. So people are happy about that, but they realize, and I think Free State Justice, the statewide LGBT group, is being very clear, and good people like Michelle and other attorneys who do family law, it reiterating to people, but don't think this solves all of your problems. Take action now to make sure you don't run into that need to go get the attorney to spend all that money and do it on the back end. Right. Because it's far more certain and cheaper to do it on the front end and do your paperwork before you get into a problem.
That is State Senator Rich Madalino here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Here with me in the studio is Attorney Michelle Zavos. We're talking about who qualifies and who should qualify as a de facto parent. We've got some callers already, and you can join the conversation, too. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Before I go to the callers, I do want to get back to something that you mentioned in passing a few minutes ago, Michelle Zavos, and that is this idea of de facto parenting is not limited to LGBT
Absolutely.
Couples. Give me a quick example of of a straight family in which this might come up and what you think this case means for them.
I think if you have a situation, let's say that a woman has a biological child, maybe there's never been a father involved. Maybe she decided to have a child by artificial insemination. She then has a relationship with the man. The man lives with her, with the child, and acts as a parent, is a father. They then break up. Well, he can be a de facto parent, the same as in an opposite sex couple. No question about it in my mind. But I do want to echo one thing that Senator said, and that is there are lots of people out there who now have gotten married, same-sex couples, who think they do not have to do a second parent adoption. And I think that is wrong and false and problematic. Because unfortunately, in the LGBT community, just as in the heterosexual community, about 50% of relationships fail. And what that means is, if there is a divorce, if a court refuses to apply the marital presumption, the non-legal, non-biological parent is out of luck. That person is going to be treated as a third party, although now with the Conover case, that person has an opportunity to meet the standards of de facto parent, which really de facto means in fact, not by default.
Right. I'm just talking about how it sounds in the ear. Senator Madaleno, you've both talked about now the importance of both parents, if adoption is involved, both parents being the adoptive parent. Does that raise access questions? I mean, is it expensive to become an adoptive parent? Is that freezing some parents out of being able to solidify their position as parents? Senator Madaleno?
Well, since Michelle practices in the field and actually knows what she's charged.
I was just wondering. I was wondering whether you hear from constituents that they get what you're saying about adoptive parents, but it's hard for them to do it.
I think it's funny. Adoption in general, the total cost of an adoption and going through the whole process can be costly depending upon how you pursue it and who you're pursuing it with. I think the actual legal work, mm-hmm. finding the attorney, filing the paperwork to get that done is both affordable, and you could probably find, there are a variety of ways. I think you could find a lawyer who is willing to help you, and I think even free state justice could help if you're not finding, if you're having problems actually paying for the adoption, the legal work. But to stress what Michelle said, the cost of the adoption would be so much less than the cost of the custody fight.
Gotcha.
Okay. The legal, and it's like, it's that famous like car commercial. You can pay me now, or you can pay me later. That cost of doing it now, it would be so much less, and that's why everyone has to realize that you should be doing those things to protect the relationship for the child, because it's not just about the adult. It is most important for the child, preserving their relationships with the adults that are the parents in their lives. That is essential for the long-term well-being of the child, and that's why all of that legal work should be done now and not left to, I'm sure a friendly judge would recognize our family. That is a gamble that no one should take with their children.
Miley has called us from Frederick. Miley, welcome to the show.
Hello?
You're on the air. Hi.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I really enjoy the show. I just wanted to offer a slightly different perspective. I'm a mediator in Frederick County, and I do work both in the circuit court and as a private mediator. Had a case. I've had several cases with de facto parents, but one recently was somewhat complicated, so I'll try to be brief. But essentially, one child had been raised by two women who were same-sex partners who identified as the child's non-biological grandmothers. They filed in court for custody and visitation because they felt they had no other options to get their connection back to this child, because the biological grandmother had taken on the care of the child. So during the mediation, one of the attorneys argued that they had no right to file in court for custody and visitation since they were not biologically related to the child, nor were they, neither was the biological mother. But the wonderful part about mediation was they were able to really focus on the intent of the two women who wanted to keep their connection with this child. The child wanted to keep the connection with her non-biological grandmother, so they were able to seek some very creative solutions in which everybody who cared about the child and loved her were able to make some agreements around how to do this without worrying about parental rights, but how to just be a family in a way that they had been, had gotten away from. There had been some bumpy patches, and then back to it. So I sort of wanted to bring up mediation as an alternative, a creative alternative, and much less costly than slogging through the court system, as you've been speaking about.
Miley, I appreciate you raising it. Let me ask Michelle Zavos to comment.
I think she's exactly right. If you have parties who will agree to go to mediation, where these cases mostly arise is that you have one party, the legal parent, this is what happened in the Conover case, who was intractable, who said, no, you will not see this child. That is not a case for mediation. I think what she described is wonderful. And so if you can get everybody in the same room where they are willing to discuss these things and they are willing to focus on the best interests of the child, mediation is a great thing. Where we come from, I mean, I do mediation myself, but where I come from is looking at a case if we have to be in court. I mean, I've had a number of these cases prior to Conover and after Janice M., one where I had a client who raised a child, biological child of her partner, for 10 years. They break up, and the biological parent says, you can't see the child. Now, fortunately, we were able to get her some access, but under the Janice M. case, it was impossible.
Senator Malino, I know we have to let you go in a minute. I guess I just would like to hear what your assessment. You said you're going to wait to see how this ruling sort of plays out before you assess whether or not there is legislation needed. How do you expect things to play out? What impact do you expect this appeals court ruling this month to have?
Well, we still don't have the resolution to the Conovers, right? I mean,
the appeals court sent it back to the trial court, right?
Right.
To write the
right.
Standards.
And, you know, the interesting thing is we'll have to see if one of the tests is has the relationship been ongoing. One of the tests that the Court of Appeals set out, which I think is part of the Wisconsin test about determining whether or not that there was a de facto parenting relationship, is has the contact been ongoing. And you know, unfortunately, in this situation, one of the parents has been kept from having contact with the child. So, you know, if the trial court comes in and says, you know, oh, wait a second, they haven't had ongoing contact, and they break apart, they break the relationship per se, that they shouldn't have ongoing contact, and that becomes a theme that develops out of, you know, cases that pop up, that because of litigation and because the de facto parent doesn't have legal standing, and as Michelle outlined, these are cases where the breakup is going poorly. Just like with any marriage, you know, when it's dissolving, sometimes it's amicable and sometimes it isn't. And these are cases where it isn't. And that if the person has been denied and the court's access, and the courts are saying, oh, well, you know, you haven't seen the child in 2 years. They don't know you as their parent. If those are the rulings that start coming out, well, then of course I think we have to revisit this and say, well, this is a catch-22 scenario where you can never win.
Once the courts get involved, yeah, I can tell that you're going to be watching it. I really appreciate your taking time to talk to us. Thank you.
No problem, and thank you to Michelle, whose work has been essential in helping so many families across Maryland actually stay together and have the legal protections that they deserve.
Thanks, Senator.
No problem. And thank you, Sheila, for your show.
Thank you. Senator Rich Madalino represents the 18th District in Montgomery County. We're going to need to take a short break here. When we come back, we'll talk more about this Maryland Appeals Court ruling that recognizes de facto parents. We'll take your calls at 410-662-8780 or your email comments midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Kast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Kast. We're talking today about de facto parenting. What constitutes a parent in the eyes of Maryland courts, and what that means for modern families, both LGBT families and other blended families. I'm speaking with Michelle Zavos, managing partner and founder of the Zavos Junker Law Group and an adjunct professor at the law school at American University. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. What do you think about the changing legal perspective on who qualifies as a parent? What do you think a court should consider when determining who has a right to be involved in a child's life? You can call us and we can talk about that. One thing that has crossed my mind, Michelle Zavos, is if we're talking about a situation in which someone involved in parenting can be looked at by a court as a de facto parent. Will that only happen if that adult wants to push for status as a de facto parent? I'm thinking of a situation, for example, where the custodial parent, say the birth parent, is perfectly, you know, it needs some financial help. Mm-hmm. And feels like, well, wait a minute, when we embarked on this, we were partners, and I expected that I would not be trying to raise this child financially by myself. Can somebody be drafted into de facto parenthood?
I think that's a very good point, and I think we're going to see those kinds of cases. We've seen them in other parts of the country, and I think that if you have a legal parent who is dependent on this other person, the same analysis is going to have to occur, and then if it's best interest of the child, yes, I think that's quite possible under the Conover case. And I would hope it's possible because I think it's the right result.
You think it's the right result?
I do.
I mean, because I see what I expected you to tell me was, no, of course not, Sheila, because it would never be in the best interest of the child to draft somebody into parenthood.
No. If you have, say, a man and a woman who have a child together, and the father says, because most of the time the child stays with the mother, and the father says, I never want to see this kid, right? The father's still responsible for child support. He's father. He's parent. He's responsible for child support. So I don't think you can have it both ways. Either you are a parent or you're not a parent. So if the standard says, if you prove these four factors and then it's in the best interest of the child, someone has a right to custody and visitation, I think the opposite should also be true. That person then has a responsibility for child support.
Paul is calling us from Kent Island. Paul, welcome to Midday.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I would just like to speak to my own experience. I was married, found myself in the middle of a bitter divorce in 2012, and found myself having to prove that I was a father, and that the default that 50-50 custody should be the place that the state should start from. It was not my experience that that's what the legal, what I had to deal with in the court system. I had to prove that I was the father that I always was, that I always did homework. I asked for a child advocate because, you know, I had an uphill battle just to prove that I was a father that wanted my children, and I can't imagine what maybe some of these other couples are going through that aren't the biological parent, because as a biological parent, it was an insurmountable hill just to achieve 50-50 custody of my own children.
So even though you are their biological father?
Yes, I'm the biological father. I always did homework and went to school functions, and I did everything that a good father does. And then when my now ex-wife and I split, she was keeping them from me a little bit, and they wanted to focus on, she has them, 5 days a week now. And I said, well, that's because I'm being kept from them. You know, I was a father before. I never stopped being a father. I just want a chance to be the father that I want to be. And I had to prove myself. And even the child advocate took time away from me. And my ex-wife, my now ex-wife, gave it back to me in a mediation session that we had. But as the biological father, I had to wage war to achieve 50-50 custody of my own children.
Gotcha. Paul, thanks for calling. Michelle?
I think that's a somewhat different standard. What a court is looking for then in a custodial situation is what's the best interest of the child. So what he's talking about is he was showing that he was such an important part of the children's life in terms of raising them. There's no question that he was the father. You start from there. But he was showing that it is in the best interest of the children to have 50-50 custody. And in fact, in Maryland, that is going to be the presumption, at least as to legal custody, that there's a joint legal custody. And then physical custody is determined by what's in the best interest of the child. Under the Conover case, we're talking about something different, and that is who's a parent. There's no question that Paul was a parent here. The question was, what's the custodial agreement going to be?
And does the court demand the same proof? Should a person who seeks visitation have to meet the same standard as someone seeking custody?
They do, because it's an initial standard. You first have to, I assume you mean, do they have to prove they're a de facto parent? So they first have to prove they're a de facto parent, and then the best interest standard kicks in, and the question is this person going for visitation or is this person going for custody? And the Conover court, in the opinion, although it didn't really focus on this, said custody and visitation. Did not just talk about visitation for a de facto parent, said custody and visitation. So I could certainly see a situation where maybe somebody was the stay-at-home parent who was not the legal parent. Then the people break up, and that's the person that the children know as what we also call their psychological parent, saying, I want custody, and then asking for child support from the other person. I think that's totally appropriate.
What is the concept of consent to parent?
Well, in other jurisdictions, I think I mentioned earlier, D.C. being one that I'm most familiar with, let's say two people decide to have a child by what's termed artificial insemination. They both agree to the artificial insemination, and they both agree they're going to raise this child together. Under D.C. law, in the D.C. statute, there's a consent to parent statute where if both of them sign that consent to parent, they're both parents. They're both parents, biological or no.
So you don't have to go through an adoption process.
So you don't have to go through, although I still would recommend it because people move to other jurisdictions, but you don't. And you don't have the question of proving you're a de facto parent. There's an interesting case that came out the same as Conover where there was this question of artificial insemination in an opposite sex couple, married couple, and who's the parent. Neither one of them were biologically related to the child. And the father tried to get out of it. He didn't want to pay child support by saying, I'm not the biological father. I did not agree to the embryo transfer. Under Maryland statutes, if it is artificial insemination and the father agrees to it, meaning he's not the biological father, this is a sperm donor creating the child, he's the father. And so the Siegling versus Schmidt, same court of appeals, said, you're the father. You're the father. You consented. So it's the same idea of what's the intent of the parents.
Is there always a record to point to once, I mean, we've talked about all these situations where the relationship has taken a sudden turn.
Yeah.
And people presumably are not only saying something different mm-hmm. than they said a year mm-hmm. or two or five before, but mm-hmm. they are perceiving it differently. Mm-hmm.
Well, there are a couple of things. People use a fertility center. They use a sperm bank. They have to sign contracts. So that's going to be right there. Under the D.C. statute, there's a form called a consent to parent form. They sign that. There it is in writing. So it's not like somebody can all of a sudden change the story.
Assisted reproductive technology, egg or sperm donors, a surrogate. I mean, there's more human beings involved in the birth of that child than two people.
Yes, that's correct.
Does this Conover ruling have implications for any of those other people?
I don't think so. It's interesting that the senator's not here because there have been attempts over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years to get a statute through the legislature to deal with what we call ART, assisted reproductive technology, and those have all failed. But other states are passing some of these because people are using these techniques. And then the question is, who's the parent or who owns the embryo? Or they divorce and they have an embryo. Is it property? Is it a child? What happens to it? So we're starting to see those kinds of cases across the country.
We're down to just a couple of minutes, and I want to be sure I have your view of what's the way forward. Do you anticipate that the number of de facto parents, not just in Maryland but in the United States, it will increase as we have more cohabitation, less marriage?
I don't think it's going to increase. I mean, I think it's out there. I think people are doing this. The question is, how do they then ensure their legal relationship to their child? And I agree with the senator. People should be doing second parent adoptions. They should be signing agreements. They should be signing consents to parents in jurisdictions that allow that. I think that once people understand that they have some rights to a child, they will then try and pursue them. In the past, they haven't, because lawyers have told them, you don't have any rights here.
And in your experience as a lawyer, has that been, I mean, I was under the impression that most states, that Maryland, during the 8 years between 2008 and this year, was an outlier, that most states were recognizing de facto parents.
More and more, but not most, I would say. More and more.
So you think that is the way forward?
I do think that's the way forward, but I think the even better way forward is these consent to parent statutes like the District of Columbia has, Delaware has, I believe Maine has, so that people aren't put in the position where they have to go into court. Because once you have to go into court, no matter what, even if you win, you lose.
Michelle Zavos, I really appreciate spending this hour with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Michelle Zavos is an attorney. She's founder of the Zavos Junker Law Group, an adjunct professor at the Washington College of Law at American University. And earlier we spoke with Democratic Senator Rich Madalino, who represents the 18th District in Montgomery County. We also want to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch for our guests today. Eddie's is a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and on Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli features unique sandwiches and salads, specials each day, all listed on their website, eddiesofrolandpark.com. Thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow. We're going to look at the community benefits agreement that Sagamore Development recently reached with neighborhoods in South Baltimore, all related to the big proposed Port Covington development. That's tomorrow on Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. Have a great afternoon.